Welcome to podcast recorded live at the Center for Spiritual Living in Portland, Oregon. We have many resources available for our online audience on our website at csoportland.org. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its video podcast, you can donate online at csoportland.org. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are on your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living. For more information, visit csoportland.org.
Welcome to Portland Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Bridget McCann. My pronouns are she and her. I am the Senior Minister and Spiritual Director here at the Center, and I am so happy to see all of you. And welcome to those who join us in our virtual community space as well. You are a part of us. For the most part, I believe and experience life as joy, especially when I'm on my bike, as many of you know, like I was yesterday. And also, there are moments that don't feel a lot like joy. Those painful moments, there's lots of different kinds of pains that we experience in life. And we start learning this even as children, right? The bumps and bruises, the skin knees, and if you played sports, perhaps a broken bone here and there, fighting with our siblings. I have six of them. Lots of fighting with the siblings, mostly over the next turn in the bathroom. But so there's lots of pains, physical pains. And these continue as we age. In fact, if you get to a certain age, which I seem to be entering into now, we spend a lot of time talking with our friends about our aches and pains. And then we also have the emotional pains of life. The emotional pains that come from not getting the support we need when we need it. Painful relationships, losses, the negative self-talk. Pain inflicted upon us by other people. There's quite a few emotional pains. And then for some, there are also spiritual pains. Pains they experience from having been taught that God is angry and vengeful and we're all a bunch of sinners and if we don't pray enough, we're going to go to hell. Thank goodness we don't teach that around here. But I know many people grew up or still have that kind of spiritual pain. So we have physical pain, emotional pain, spiritual pain. And some pains are necessary. Some pains serve a purpose. For instance, some of that physical pain is a sign to pay attention to something. There's something not right here. So maybe we can live with those pains because they serve a purpose. But many of these pains don't seem to serve a purpose. Perhaps they do, but they don't seem to. So we go into avoidance mechanisms. Well, instead of having the pain of relationships, I just won't have relationships, right? Or if you're a parent, perhaps you become a little overprotective of your child and become a helicopter parent, thinking we can protect our children from all the pains of life. Spiritually, we can go into spiritual bypass, which around here, and I should say around Centers for Spiritual Living, is often stated as, it's all God, so it's all good. And we say this even when it is most definitely not all good. We might also try to stick our head in the sand. I'm just going to ignore what's going on. This might go with spiritual bypass. I'm going to ignore what's going on. It's all God, so it's all good. And most often these avoidance mechanisms do not work. Because, as so many of us have probably heard, pain is inevitable. but suffering is optional. Pain is inevitable because a lot of times it's automatic. The body is going to have certain automatic sensations. We're going to have emotional responses to what happens in our lives. But suffering comes from our thoughts and beliefs about the pain. And therefore, it's optional, or at least there's something we can do about it. The Buddha was one of the first great spiritual teachers to make this connection between our desires or our thoughts and beliefs around the thing desired and suffering. And of course, the Buddha was not always the Buddha. The Buddha started out as Siddhartha Gautama, born into a wealthy royal family, raised in the palace, protected from all pains and unpleasantness, because when he was a baby, there were prophecies that this child would become either a powerful king or a great spiritual leader. And his father much preferred that his son become a king and not a spiritual leader. And he feared that if his son was exposed to the suffering in the world, God forbid he might become a spiritual leader and want to help people with that. And so instead, because he wanted Siddhartha to become a king, he protected him behind those palace walls. Perhaps Siddhartha's father was the first helicopter parent. No pain shall enter my son's life. For 29 years, he was protected from all unpleasantness. But of course, the curiosity got the best of Siddhartha, and at the age of 29, he started sneaking out of the palace walls and venturing out into the world amongst people who were not rich in royalty, were not being protected. And what did he see? He saw suffering. For the first time in his life, he saw an old man. He saw a sick man. He saw a corpse. This suffering that he witnessed for the first time in his life caused him a great deal of distress. It caused him even more distressed when he realized, oh, this could happen to me. This is most likely going to happen to me. I will get old. I will be sick someday, and I will die someday. So wanting to learn more about suffering and where it comes from and how to prevent it, he left behind his pampered life in the palace and went out into the world. And after many years of trying various spiritual paths and various teachings, he came to sit under the Bodhi tree. He eventually became enlightened. And part of that enlightenment was coming to realize this connection between attachment and suffering. Attachment to our desires and suffering. The reason attachment to our desires causes suffering, well, there are many reasons. First of all, we suffer because we want to change things that we probably are not able to change. We also suffer because we want to control things. We want to control the outcomes of life situations, and this often comes from fear. We're afraid that past unpleasant events will repeat themselves or that the future won't be what we want it to be. We also suffer because when we're attached to outcomes and we don't get the outcome we want, we become angry, resentful, bitter, full of feelings of revenge, perhaps, doubt, mistrust. Attachment leads to suffering because when we are attached to our desires so strongly that we keep clinging to them, it is a constant reminder that we do not have the thing desired. Attachment leads to suffering because we are in a constant state of wanting. Attachment also leads to suffering because It robs our freedom. Ram Dass tells a story that illustrates this. How to catch a monkey. How do you catch a monkey in India? Or perhaps anywhere, I guess. Have a glass jar with the very, very narrow opening. Monkey comes, oh, and you put some peanuts in the jar. Monkey comes along, sees the peanuts, wants the peanuts, craves the peanuts, squeezes its hand through the narrow opening, grabs the peanuts, and now its fist cannot get back through the narrow opening. The monkey is trapped by its desire. And what is absolutely crazy about this is that the monkey is trapped by its obsession or its desire for the peanuts it cannot have because it's obsessed with them and cannot let them go. It has lost its freedom. It has given up its freedom to these peanuts, to its desire. But we are not monkeys. As far as we know, we have higher consciousness. We can reclaim our freedom. And if attachment is the problem, detachment is the solution. Detachment helps us reclaim our freedom and lessen our suffering, because in detachment, we let go of that constant clinging to. We let go of the constant need to control things that we probably can't control. We let go of the thoughts and beliefs that are causing our suffering. We let go of wanting things to be different than they are. Now, detachment is not detaching from those that we love. It is not detaching from the problems that we have in society. It is not detaching from our emotions. This is all just insensitivity and denial. We're talking about detaching from insisting, I must have this outcome. I must have this thing no matter what. That's the kind of detachment we're talking about. And when we can detach, then we can move into acceptance. Accepting the reality of the thing without resisting it. The author Byron Katie says, I am a lover of what is, not because I'm a spiritual person, but because it hurts when I argue with reality. Amen, Sister Byron. It really hurts when we argue with reality. So instead, we want to accept things as they are. We want to accept the fact that everything changes. One of the great teachings of Buddhism, everything is impermanent, so just get used to it and accept it. And for all of you out there, and I include myself in this, who are of that certain age, just accept that our bodies will never again be what they were when they were 20. Okay? We'll be a lot happier if we can do that. I'm working on it. Now, in our teaching, the science of mind, we teach that we co-create our lives with the divine. We teach that it is good and right to have the life we desire. So how do we square all this with what I'm saying today? Well, let's take a look at the word desire. Desire means having strong feelings of wanting something. Strong feelings for wanting something to change. Deepak Chopra encourages us, instead of desire, have intentions. And the difference is this. Desire, and this is from his book, Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. Desire is placing our attention on something with attachment. Intention is desire, but adhering to the spiritual law of detachment. Now, I'm presuming the life we all intend to have is less suffering and more joy. So Deepak reminds us that the beauty or the power in this detachment or having intention instead of desire is that intention with detachment leads to what he calls life-centered present moment awareness. Now pay attention to each word of that. Life-centered, present moment awareness. The reason this is so powerful is this intention with detachment is we can stay in the present moment, which, by the way, is the only moment in which we can act. We cannot act in the past. We cannot act in the future. We can only act in this moment. I know I'm stating the obvious, but sometimes we need to be reminded of the obvious, right? I cannot change what happened in the past, no matter how painful it was. I cannot act in the future in the outcome I want, but I can act in this moment. So intention with detachment keeps us present without the pain of the past and without the anxiety of the future. We can do what is in front of us. We can do today's work today. Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita also reminds us of this when he says, without attachment, perform always the work that has to be done. For man attains the highest by doing work without attachment. And he reminds us of this great paradox, that when we can stop clinging to the results, we are probably going to achieve better results. When we can stop clinging to the results, some future result, we will probably bring about better results. Now, how is this so? Because when we are that present in this moment, not attached to the outcome, but just focused on the task today, then we are doing it without the anxiety about the future. Our actions and our judgments that are the discrimination that we have to have today in how to do this task is much clearer when it's not clouded by our anxiety about the future or our pain of the past. This is what I need to do today. My attention is on this task today. There might be 50 steps I have to take between now and that intention becoming manifest. But if I'm worried about the other 49, I cannot do the best I can on this task right here today. And the beauty, not only do we have better results, but we're probably going to enjoy it a lot more and suffer a lot less. So this is one of the powers of detachment. It gives us present moment awareness of the task in front of us. Another great power of detachment is it connects us with the field of infinite potentiality. Deepak goes on in his book to write, in detachment lies the wisdom of uncertainty. In the wisdom of uncertainty lies the freedom from our past, from the known, which is the prison of past conditioning. And in our willingness to step into the unknown, the field of all possibilities, we surrender ourselves to the creative mind that orchestrates the dance of the universe. And I love that Sean mentioned that in his prayer, and he did not see this quote beforehand. Thank you, Sean. You are a channel. You know, very often when we pray, we say this or something better. That is an exercise in detachment. This or something better, creative genius of the universe. When we are attached to a specific outcome, we're very rigid. We're very closed. But when we are detached, we're open. We're receptive. We're better able to receive that divine inspiration. We're more connected with our intuition, both of which, and actually those are the same thing, connects us to that field of infinite potentiality. And instead of getting angry when things don't go as we planned, perhaps we can be open. Perhaps we can think, Maybe there's more than one way to achieve this intention. Maybe the one way I thought I had to do this, or even that one outcome that I thought would satisfy me, maybe there are other outcomes that would satisfy this intention in an even more powerful way. I mentioned the author Byron Katie a few moments ago. Byron is the author of a book and a system of decreasing our suffering called simply The Work. It's a method of self-inquiry meant to eliminate the suffering we cause by what very often, perhaps most often, is just a story we're telling ourselves with our thoughts and beliefs. Byron writes, "A thought is harmless unless we believe it. It's not our thoughts, but our attachment to our thoughts that causes suffering. Attaching to a thought means believing that it's true without inquiring. A belief is a thought that we've been attaching to, often for years." So Byron, after having her own great difficulties and working through it, came up with this system. It's quite simple. You can Google it if you want more information later. Byron with a Y, Byron Katie, it's a woman, The Work. But it's quite simple. You write it down, and she insists that you write it down, the troubling thought, the thought that is causing you stress or causing you to suffer. And then you ask yourself four simple questions. Is it true? Yes or no, is it true? Second question, can you absolutely know it's true? And this question is meant to get us to go a little deeper, to go a little deeper into the truth that is behind the truth we think we know. Question number three, how do you react, or what happens when you believe that thought? What comes up in your body? How do you experience it? How do you treat the other person or the situation involved? Question number four, who would you be without the thought? How does that feel different? How do you interact with the person or situation differently? Which one do you like better? Which one is kinder? Which one brings you more peace? So after you've asked those four questions, you develop a turnaround statement. This is the troubling thought or belief that I've been telling myself for a long time. Do a turnaround. What is the opposite? What is a more truthful statement? And by the way, if you've not worked with a practitioner, this is what they help you do. To turn away from the problem and towards the solution. Turn away from the unbelief and to something that is the deeper truth about you and your life. But Byron calls it the turnaround. And then give yourself three examples of how that turnaround true statement is true in your life. Tim Moon, a therapist, gives the example of Corey in using this method. Now, Corey came to Tim 2 years after his partner left him for another man. For 2 years, Corey has been trapped, captured by hate and rage and wanting revenge and insisting that Lyle come back and apologize for everything. He was totally stuck for 2 years. Corey's troubling, stressful thought. In order for me to be happy, I need Lyle to admit he hurt and betrayed me, and I need him to offer apologies and restitution. Is that true, Corey? Yes, it is. Can you absolutely know that it's true? Well, I guess not. I can't really know for sure that my life would be better if Lyle actually did that. I'm not 100% certain I would be happier. Question three. Who would you be without the thought? I'd probably feel a lot lighter and a lot happier, and I would finally have Lyle out of my life. And I think I missed a step. How do you react when you have the belief? That was question three. I apologize, I missed it. He admitted that he feels bitter, that he feels heavy, weighed down. And then question four was, how would you be without it? He'd feel a lot lighter. Corey's turnaround thought. I need to admit that I'm hurting myself every time I ruminate about Lyle. And instead of waiting for him to apologize, maybe I need to apologize to myself for what I'm doing to me. That's a lot different. Everything in that statement Corey can do. He can't change Lyle, but he can change his reaction to the situation. So for weeks after, Corey worked with this, and eventually, it all evaporated. His pain melted away. His suffering melted away. And he felt indeed a lot lighter. Staying attached to our desires and our misguided thoughts and beliefs leads to suffering. Detachment leads to freedom and less suffering. Let go of the peanuts. Set yourself free and have less suffering in your life. Let's pray. I invite our practitioners and ministers to stand with me and lend their consciousness to this prayer. Thank you. This life is joy. This life is joy because that is one of those divine qualities that is part of the fabric of all creation. That has been here from the beginning of time, even before the beginning, is here now and always will be, because joy is the divine itself. That is the intention of the One. That is its intention for us. That is its intention when it brought us forth, so that could experience its joy through its creation, which includes experiencing its joy through us, through its magnificent beings, us. And so I know and declare that each and every person has the power to experience more of that joy by just letting go. Let go. And in this letting go, we are exhibiting faith. Faith that joy is ours. Faith that joy, that life is joy, and that it is ours if only we remove the barriers to it. And how good this is, how freeing this is. And for that, I'm grateful, because we have the power. We have the power to not suffer. I let it go and let it be, and so it is.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you happen to be in the Portland, Oregon area, we'd love to have you visit in person. The Portland Center for Spiritual Living is located at 6211 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Our inspirational service is at 11 a.m. every Sunday. We also have many programs, classes, and workshops developed just for our online audience. To find out more, go to our website at cslportland.org and look under the online tab. We have a variety of content dedicated specifically for our podcast listeners. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its podcast, you can donate online at cslportland.org/donate. Our website is also the place to learn more about what's going on at the center or to contact us. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are in your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living.